Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
The National Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, D.C. is closed right now because of the pandemic, but it's opened a window to discuss the other major crisis gripping the country right now, police violence against Black people. Talking About Race is a new web portal that's meant to spark discussion, community building, and self-care. And two women who helped develop material for the portal join us now. Kandra Flanagan is the museum's Director of Teaching and Learning. Hi, Kandra.
Hello.
And Anna Henley is Director of Early Childhood Education at the museum. Hi, Anna.
Thank you for having us. We're very happy to be here.
Yes, and I'll start with you, Kandra. I think it's interesting that the framing for this project is not to learn about race and racism, but to talk about it. Why is that distinction important?
This portal is a result of almost a decade's worth of work that Anna and I have been doing. Anna is Director of Early Childhood Education and myself as Director of Teaching and Learning, both came to a conclusion early on that we needed to help educators and families and other people that are committed to equity have these conversations because the conversations aren't happening. Yes, we can learn about it, we can get the intellectual understanding, but then we need to have that conversation to then foster the community in order to then move to that next step of action.
Anna, you know, talking about race and specifically racism can be difficult for a lot of people. How do you get started?
I think it always starts with your own personal journey and interrogating your own racialized identity and then building on that and knowing that it's a process and a practice. So it's something that's done every day, but it's got to start somewhere.
Yeah. The one big thing about this that I've heard anecdotally from white colleagues and friends is the fear around broaching these subjects because they haven't talked about it before and not wanting to step on people's toes and say the wrong thing. I'm sure this is something that you've heard before as well.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's something we come across a lot in the work, especially working with white people, and that fear of making a mistake, but silence speaks even louder than words sometimes. And by not speaking, there's a louder message that's being put out there. And so that's why we encourage people to lean into discomfort and knowing that it's in the discomfort where the learning and the growing can happen.
Kandra, we read recently something by white fragility author and scholar Robin DiAngelo. She told Jonathan Capehart of the Washington Post, quote, "I don't actually think that most white people care about racial justice. I really don't." This is such a powerful statement. There are so many painful hurdles here. This is such a big question, but how do you get people to care?
That question is something that's stayed with us and been on our minds, that we're trying to have this moment, this revolution, this moment of changing hearts and minds. And we are committed to having the tools available, putting the tools in front of people to continue to learn and then to help them guide steps into talking with their families, hoping that that's a way that they're spreading the message, the word, that we can move from being non-racist or not thinking about race to making steps towards being anti-racist in this society.
And one part of the portal that really gets to this is also the formation of racial identity. Can you tell us more about the importance of this particular discussion and the greater discussion about race and racism?
Scientifically, race biologically does not exist. Scientifically, from a biological perspective. However, race and the categorization of people by races is a social construct, and that's what we call that racialized identity, and that is very real. It has real-world consequences, and it's the impacts and dangers sometimes that can go along with racialized identity are something that we do need to recognize and unpack and really think about. And so that's why we really hone in as one of our main topics for this portal on racialized identity. There's a lot of conversation, well, race doesn't exist, it's not biological, so then we don't have to think about it. And that just isn't true. That racialized identity is real. And that's the part where we have to dig in and get an understanding of people's lived experiences and how we can then start to build a more equitable society.
You know, what's interesting about what you said here is that we often teach children that race does not matter, that race is only skin deep. And so what you're saying here is also a discussion to have with children around the formation of racial identity, because that may give them an understanding as they move through life about the complexities of race and racism.
Absolutely. We often talk about the need for conversations to be layered. And if you are doing this work in a sustained and long game sort of view with your children, that there's a solid foundation that you want to establish with your children of understanding and joy, to use my colleague Anna's words, in the range of skin colors, right? In the range of skin tones and how beautiful the various shades of brown are. But then to layer that on with the concept and notion that then we as a society, as a culture, have grown up and live in this space in where we give labels to certain groups of people. The labels of white and black and other labels, and then how those labels of white and black are those racialized identities. And then you can begin to talk about the different privileges and disadvantages that are attributed to various labels and that come with that. And that helps to build that layered conversation, because as our children are out in the world and engaging in media, engaging in literature, they are also taking in messages. And so we want to know and get an understanding of where they are and what they're thinking, and then help guide and help interrogate the thinking with them.
I want to also ask you about something else, and that's self-care. Anna, that's a part of this portal as well. Tell us a little bit more about why it was important to have this as a particular point of education for folks about caring for oneself while also learning and talking about issues of race and racism.
It's something that Kendra and I identified from the very start of this work, because we know that this work is heavy and it's hard, it's ongoing, it's a practice, and what we don't want is the burnout that can happen. And it looks different depending on your racialized identity. But we were inspired also by the words of Audre Lorde that self-care is part of the revolution.
And it really sounds like taking the steps for self-care are really important in light of the fact that this is not a Band-Aid type fix here when you talk about dismantling racism. It is really about the long game. We hear so often, what can I do? What can I read? How can I get myself up to speed? As if it is a lesson that you then learn and then you move on from. What I'm hearing from both of you is that unpacking racism and our roles in it is a lifelong process.
Absolutely. Many folks are responding to this moment, and that is important. We need to be responding to what's happening currently. And it is a lifelong journey. It's not something you get to check off. It's not like you wake up one morning and are like, that's it, I've made it, I'm anti-racist. But it's truly ongoing work that is practice, and you get an opportunity with every choice you make to be anti-racist or not, depending on if you have children. It's the choices of books you read. It's the conversations you have with the children. It's the behavior you model for your children. Where do you choose to spend your money? Where do you buy your books, for example? Looking for Black-owned businesses and investing in the community. So that should, I hope, be empowering and inspiring for some people to know that they can make daily choices that make a difference in these small, what can feel like seemingly small changes can add up to have really big change and impact.
That's Anna Henley, Director of Early Childhood Education at the National Museum of African American History and Culture. And Kendra Flanagan is Director of Teaching and Learning. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.